Welcome to the WBFO Press Pass. I'm Mark Scott, joined today by Buffalo News Suburban Editor Bruce Andriach. Bruce, welcome.
Good to be here again, Mark.
Suburban governments in the region have been releasing their respective 2013 town budgets in the past week. Lancaster Town Supervisor Dino Fidoli released a budget that cut taxes. Amherst Town Supervisor Barry Weinstein's plan increases spending but holds the line on property taxes. And residents of several other towns, including the town of Tonawanda and Orchard Park, will see slight tax increases. Bruce, how challenging was it for these supervisors to put together their budgets?
I think it always is. I think in the current economic climate and operating under the new tax cap system we have in New York State, probably they would all say more challenging than ever. But I think one of the themes that has emerged this year is maybe the headline would be better than expected. I think that especially after what we saw with school budgets this year, and I think what we'll continue to see, it would have been fair to expect that there would have been large cuts, large tax increases, things like that. But really not as bad as I myself kind of thought they would be. Part of it is because, you know, the scope of town government in particular is not quite as large as some of the other entities that pass budgets. But part of it, too, is because sales tax revenue is better than expected. And the towns have been doing, I think, a better job of passing on some of the costs to that they had been passing on to taxpayers to their employees, and especially when it comes to things like health care and pension costs.
Well, Lancaster's Dino Fidoli's budget comes out just days after he paid his outstanding property tax bill, something we talked about during our last visit. Is this lower tax rate designed to lessen the political fallout that he could face from his personal tax problems?
Well, it won't hurt. I think, again, if he had to do it all over again, he probably would reconsider his plan to pay the taxes on those properties he owned. But he's still a politician. He's a smart man. He knows that the way to get the voters back on your side is to say, I'm trying to save you money. I'm trying to do what's best for the community. Try to separate out my personal financial situation with what I'm doing for you as your supervisor.
Since we last talked, you had a column about how the era of town government downsizing appears to be over. Given the difficult budget situations we're talking about here, is it surprising that the trend towards smaller and perhaps more efficient governments is really failing to take root?
I don't know. I mean, when Kevin Gaughan first proposed this idea, I immediately saw it as a gesture, a symbol of somebody trying to do something to say, look, we actually can do the same amount of work and serve our constituents with fewer people on a town board. It was never meant to save a lot of money. And in fact, it has saved a little, but I think it's open for debate whether it's been more efficient or effective. I think some of the town elected officials in these communities would say it's been made more difficult for all the reasons they predicted. They can't have a conversation about town business without being accused of violating the open meetings law. And the reality is, I don't know that you've noticed any improvement or deterioration of town services as a result of this. And when you look back at the votes in some of these communities that voted to go from 5 to 3 members, they were very close. And now what we're seeing happening in West Seneca and Alden is that when you put the power of government behind an initiative to go back to 5 members, I wonder if people still have the taste like they had a few years ago to downsize. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I really wouldn't try to predict it.
And with a board of 3 people, if one is absent for any reason, you only have 2 people. That's not really a quorum. How do you make decisions?
That's the problem. Yeah. Is you if you and your colleague disagree about something, that's it. We can't take any action. Now, on the other side, you could say, let's work a little bit harder to make sure that all 3 people are always there. But things happen. Life happens. And people are not able to always attend the meetings. And whether you can chalk that up to, you know, government officials saying, see, we told you we can't do it, and maybe not working very hard. It is the reality that that does sometimes happen.
Interestingly, the chief advocate of this movement, as you mentioned, Kevin Gaughan, once again lost in his attempt to get elected to public office.
I think had Kevin won that primary for the assembly seat, you could have looked at it and said, the public still likes what Kevin Gaughan has to say. And based on the emails I got from a lot of his supporters when I wrote that column, there are a lot of people in the community who still are behind Kevin Gaughan and behind the idea, we need to do something. I've often said when people ask me, you know, what is it with this guy? You can say a lot of things about him. But one thing that you have to say about him is he's one of the few people in this community who's trying to do something. You may not agree with him, but he's out there trying to do something. In the case of his political aspirations, I think he just doesn't have enough support to get to that next level.
Yeah, because I can't think of another candidate who has lost more over an extended period of time than Kevin Gaughan. Yeah.
Right.
In the town of Amherst, there's a dispute over food trucks. Is this a situation of town government throwing roadblocks in the way of a new type of business that is trying to take hold in our region?
I think it's easy to look at it that way. We saw this to some extent, to a large extent, when the food trucks first came to Buffalo. Restaurant owners and others said, well, it's an unfair playing field, and by letting these guys in, you're affecting my business. Maybe so, but the reality is food trucks, look around in popular culture, food trucks are popping up everywhere. The people want them. You know, if we are a truly capitalist society and we are supply and demand, why not let these guys have a chance? The people who are going to buy a taco from Lloyd's Taco Truck at lunchtime are not the same people who are going to go into a restaurant or maybe even go into the food court in the Boulevard Mall. And you know what? If they are, competition is good. I think the town of Amherst should be trying everything they can to let these businesses open. We're already known as New York State, the business-unfriendly state. Here we are setting up another roadblock for these food trucks, and I think that's unfortunate.
And it almost cost a fundraiser for the city mission, which really would have looked bad from a PR point of view if that hadn't taken place on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, we live in a polarized society. Everybody agrees, but I don't think you find too many people who are anti-city mission and the work that they do. So being portrayed as the big bad monster getting in the way of an institution that's working to help the truly less fortunate is not something that Amherst wants to be known for. So it's good that there was a little bit of a common sense reaction to this and saying, let's allow this to go forward. It certainly behooves the town officials to make sure that they're looking out for everything to make sure these businesses are run correctly. But let's not be known as the community that just immediately says, no, this is different. We don't like it.
Now, last week you wrote about Sweet Home Schools cracking down on student dress. You quote the Sweet Home High School principal as saying current fashion trends have pushed the bounds of decency.
That's true. And you know what? When I heard those words come out of the principal's mouth, Jolene Reinholz, I said, I'd be willing to bet that school principals and school officials have said those exact words every year for the past 100. The first time we saw a woman's ankle, I'm sure it was a scandalous in the United States. But it's also true, and I look at this through my own middle-aged eyes, that, you know, come on, some of the things the kids are getting away with and wearing to school, you really have to wonder. And so I pointed out in the column, this is where my kids go to school. I applaud the fact that they're trying to enforce a dress code that is not overly restrictive. Nobody's saying, you know, let's go back to collars up to the neck and you know, make sure that there's no exposed skin. But telling people, look, let's dress more like adults. You know, you're not going to go out into the workplace on your first job interview with your pants hanging down around your knees or with shorts that really are more appropriate for a day at the beach. So I applaud what Jolene has done, and I hope that it continues to be enforced there and elsewhere.
You also wrote about a popular stop for thousands of us each fall, a certain cider mill in West Seneca.
Yeah, you know, I am ashamed as a Western New Yorker to say that I had never been to the Mayer Brothers Cider Mill store before that. All I knew about it was, boy, do I love that cider, and boy, does it have a good reputation. And it was fun to go out there and realize that the image I had in my mind of Mayer Brothers was one of kind of an old barn with a huge business inside that produces cider. And what you have instead is this general store-looking place right on the road. And go there on a Saturday during the fall at your own risk, because there are hundreds and hundreds of cars coming and going, every one of them with people smiling when they get out and smiling even more broadly when they come back out. It truly is an institution. It was nice to be able to highlight it.
I grew up in West Seneca and, of course, went there as a young person. But in my adulthood, there was a much smaller cider mill at the Williamsville Waterworks
right.
A few years ago. And we just loved going there because by that time, Mayer Brothers was the big behemoth.
Right.
But here was this little cider mill pressing the siter at its site that we could see the equipment and how it worked, and it was really charming. And unfortunately, we lost that, but maybe in the rebuild of this cider mill or this old mill, they can bring cider back.
That would be nice. I mean, because it is one of the things I was saying to people as I spoke to them that day is in our community, the end of summer is really a mourning period. I know a lot of people ski, a lot of people love the outdoors, but still there's that communal dread, oh no, here comes fall. But having places like Mayer Brothers, having what we had in the Williamsville Mill for a while, it really does kind of brighten the mood a little bit, and it's nice to have places like that here at a time of year when we're all dreading what's coming next.
Well, Bruce, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Bruce Andriach is suburban editor of the Buffalo News. Mark Scott, WBFO and AM 970 News.